morning. Welcome. My name is Giorgio Sardo. I work in Microsoft Corporation in Redmond. I'm a senior technical evangelist working on HTML5, Internet Explorer. And so I work very closely with the engineering team. I've worked very closely with Dean Akanovich and all of his team. And I also like to travel the world and meet customers, developers, topsides. And I like to have like a two-way conversation. So today I'm here to talk to you about HTML5, but I also want to hear from you about your scenarios and questions. So feel free at any time, ask me a question. First of all, let me ask you, like, how many of you are developers? Okay, so who didn't raise their hand? Are they IT pro? Business? Marketing? Okay, so I think everybody's a developer here. Great. How many of you are already using HTML5 today? No one? How many of you wants to use HTML5 and they're kind of like getting ready for it? Okay, excellent. So I think this session will be perfect for you. First of all, I have here a few t-shirts. And they told me that they say, so I don't speak Slovenian, but they told me that they say I'm a HTML5 talent, right? So I want to give the first t-shirt to the first person that came in this room. And I think he was sitting over there. Like, who was that? Like, you know, the person that came here in the room first this morning. Was it you, sir? No? No, I think it was the sir there. I'll try to do that. Excellent. And so I have a few other t-shirts. I will ask you a question, and the best answer get the t-shirt. Today we're going to talk about HTML5. And because this is a 400-level session, this is a technical session, I prepared only one slide. And this is the slide. There is a lot of people talking about HTML5 today. Actually, too many people are talking about it. On Facebook, I saw that the definition of HTML5 was like something like how to meet ladies, which was funny. But actually, that's not the right thing, right? And then sometimes we get lost into the HTML5 buzz keyword, whatever. So let me try to bring you back to reality. And I know this might sound complex, but you are developers, you're smart, and you need to know the real truth behind HTML5. So there are a lot of standards today, a lot of web standards. Some of them are work under the W3C, some of them under the ECMAScript, some under the IETF. HTML5, technically, is really one specification. And this specification, the first bar here on the left of this slide, that's the HTML5 specification. And then you have other, maybe 99 specifications that have different names. Something from CSS3, something from SVG, from ECMAScript, from DOM. It's important to understand that when we talk about HTML5 today, actually we're referring to all of these. And you as a developer, you need to know this. And the reason is that, as you can see below here, I have 5 statuses. These are the official status we classify specification into the W3C, which is the organization that makes standards. And so the specification is like something that grows over time. When people are building a specification, it's a working draft, and it means that it changes every day. And there is Microsoft that says, I want this feature with this name. And then Mozilla come in and say, no, I think we need to have another name that starts with open. And then Google comes in and, no, I think we need another name that starts with Chrome. And that's where the conversation happens. When the specification is almost ready, it goes to last call. Last call is what we call feature complete in Microsoft. And then it goes to candidate recommendation and to recommendation. Recommendation means it's locked. It's finalized. It's not going to change. So it's safe to implement. Now, as you look at the spectrum of the 99 specifications here, different specifications are at a different level of maturity. And that's very important to understand. And this is why probably, like, today we're talking about HTML5. We're not talking about IE specifically. But I think that sometime you will find a future in HTML5 that is supported in Chrome but not in Firefox, supported in IE but not in Chrome. Supported in Opera, but not Safari. And the reason is that each browser is making different decisions about what's more important, what's important to prioritize in terms of features. The decision that Microsoft is taking is to focus on enable developers to build with the stable specification and do background, like in the background. We're working on all of the others. But until they are ready to be used, we're not going to put them in i9. And the reason is called i6. We learned a lot from i6. You remember the time when we implemented specifications that were great and developers were asking for them. And then 1 week later, 1 year later, those specifications actually changed. They didn't become standards as we were expecting. And so we want to avoid, again, to make the same mistake. We want to avoid to put something in the browser today that changed in 1 year and break your scenarios. And that's why we focus on HTML5 ready into the main product. Okay, that was it for my slides. I think now we can move to the demo. So how many of you are using Visual Studio? Excellent. This is the best tool ever, thanks to the Visual Studio team for building such a great tool. Actually, you might be surprised. I have a lot of talks, even like with open source community, with Linux community, Java developers, and still like everyone loves Visual Studio. It's just such a great product. So I have here today a few demos. And I divided the demo into different categories. And we will focus on code. So this session is focused on code. And I have here the demo that we start talking about HTML5, and then we will get into the kind of like video, audio, media scenario. And then we will focus on Canvas, SVG, CSS, and at the end, ECMAScript 5. So all of the news with JavaScript 5. Let's start from something that might seem simple, but it's good to have it in mind as we move forward. So let's start from like a template in Visual Studio. You create a new page, and this is what Visual Studio gives you. A very long doc type and a boring template. Now, is this HTML5? What do you think? Yes or not? Yes? Not? Maybe? All others. Well, yes. HTML5, actually, is not something new. It's an extension to the existing HTML. So all of your websites, unless they're written in some very specific code, are already HTML5 website. There are things, however, that HTML5 allow you to do which are more flexible. So let's start from the same page, and let's start reducing this page to the very minimal components that are required by the HTML5 specification. First of all, the doc type. You can get rid of this. This is enough for the doc type. Second one, the title. The title is a required element for your page. The third one is the meta tag, right? Today, you need to specify the char set. But the real information in all of this meta tag is really the char set information. So you can get rid of this and just call char set equal UTF-8. I'll bring this on top. And I will delete everything else. Now, gentlemen and ladies, you might be surprised, but this is an HTML5 page. And this will validate as a valid HTML5 page. Now, let me run it. Just want to make sure that, I'm not cheating. You see Hello Mama, you see everything there. Now, what's the trick? Are you going to build a website like this? Obviously not. Why? Because this approach works fine if you have only HTML content. But if you need to import style sheets and other script like JavaScript resources, etc., you most likely want to use still like the same format. And so the minimum template that I suggest you to use and to start from is this one. So this is like the template, reduced template. This is a valid HTML5 page. So if you're starting a new page and you want to make HTML5 page, I suggest you to start from here. And in particular, also notice that I added the lang equal n. That's an attribute that is very useful for screen readers, so they know what language your page is written for. Now, in HTML5, one of the main features of the HTML5 specification is the idea of having new markup elements, right? In the past, I'm sure you use a lot of divs. You have div everywhere. And then you use class names to the divs, right? And so you have, for example, a div with the class name menu or the class name navigation bar. And so some of the guys at the working group, they thought, why don't we just take those CSS names and we transform them into like some semantic element? in such a way that the page have a semantic meaning. And this is what happens with HTML5. So this page looks normal, right? There isn't anything specific running here. But let me open the developer tools in IE9. How many of you, by the way, have used before the F12 tools? Okay, that's a good number. So something that the developer tools allow you to do is to inspect like the different parts of this page, right? And for example, let's select the header here. And you will see that I have this new element called header. And as you actually look at the page, it's made of a header, it's made of a navigation bar called nav, and then it's made of a section. So let's expand, for example, the section here. I have my section. Actually, let's look into the content. And then I have an aside, which is this panel on the right. And then here is there is an image. Let's look at the image, how we define this. It's called a figure. And the figure has a fig caption, which is like the note under the image. Now, you might ask, what's the point, right? I can do the same page using a div. I really don't need the semantics, right, semantic tags. And actually, you're right. You don't need them. But if you put the semantics tag today, you're giving a meaning to the page. Why this is useful? The proper standards people will tell you, well, because now a screen reader knows that this is the navigation bar, this is the content, and then it can switch from part to part more easily, and like from like a blind people or person that has some accessibility challenge, like it's easier to reach the content. The other big benefit is that soon search engines will be able to crawl your page and discard everything that is just like there for style, and they will know what the real content of the page is, right? They will be able to understand the meaning of the page just looking at those tags. So they will go straight into the navigation bar, and they will know that your site is built with those three sections. And that will allow them to be obviously more predictable over the results. There is another feature that actually is left out of the mix. This is not properly HTML5. This is a separate working group that is working on the geolocation, but still want to show it here. And geolocation is one of the new features that allow you to know the position of the person. So let's have a look to this page. In the body, I just have like a div, so I really don't have nothing. And then in the code behind, I'm attaching to the load event. Notice that I'm doing this like using the proper way, so add event listener. And then I check for the existence of the navigation geolocation. And if geolocation is supported, then I'm looking for watch position. Watch position is going to return a callback called onPositionFound, and eventually other callbacks, like if the request succeed or fails. And the onPositionFound is going to return all of the, my information. In particular, I have information like latitude and longitude. So if I test this now, and I give, you see here at the bottom, I'm giving permission to access my location. There it is. This is clearly, as you can see, the location of this room, right? Is it? How many people think that this is correct? How many don't? So I'll tell you something, and this is actually something valid for any browser again. You see, I'm not talking about IE9 here. The precision of the geolocation of the result depends obviously on the network, right? When I'm US, I have to admit, it's perfect. Sometimes it's able even to tell me the floor I'm staying at, like if I'm in a high building. In general, if you are connected to a Wi-Fi network, it will be more precise than like a cable. So in this case, for example, I'm connected to the cable, so it's not perfect. And in fact, I have here like a couple of lines of code that basically allow me to connect to the Bing map provider. So I'm just creating a map in the div below, and I'm passing my credential. This is just like my credential key for the Bing map service. And then I'm saying, please set the zoom to 14 and center the map on my current location. And so I can check where actually I'm connected to. So now we will know the truth. As you can see, this is not really where we are now, I think, right? I think this is another city, is it? You know this map. But like yesterday evening, for example, I was connected to the Wi-Fi in my hotel, and it was perfect to the point. So it really depends on the network you're connected to. All right, any question about HTML, about what we've seen so far? Good? Bad? Do you want more information? Yes, so let's get into the more serious stuff. Another future of HTML5 is obviously the video and the audio. And now we're going to get into the more tricky details. So the video tag is beautiful, right? You have one video tag, you set the source, you run this into the browser, and nothing happens. Why? Well, because I need to play the video. You see the video control is here. And still nothing is happening. Why doesn't the video play? Okay. T-shirt for who knows the answer. And no, there isn't a bug in my demo. Permissions? No. Source? What do you mean with source? No, the location of the file is correct. The codec is correct. As you can see, well, yeah, I'm using an MP4 codec, which is supported. It starts with M. Am I missing files? No. It's related to IIS. Great, MIME type. You got it. Thank you. So, and this is actually the biggest mistake that every time, me included, like most of the developers do. You need to specify the MIME types. You see, I'm using an MP4 MIME type here, extension. If the server is not sending the file with the MIME type for video, the browser will just reject it for security reason. Right now, the MIME type is like something like a text plain, maybe. And so the way you can set the MIME type is either on IIS, or if you have like an ASP.NET project, you can do this in the web config. And as you can see here, in the web config, I'm already setting up the MIME type for MP4, as well as for WebM, for SVG, and for WAF that we will see later. So now that I set up the MIME type, I refresh the page. So if really there isn't any other bug, you will see this time the video, right? And the video source, as we saw, was the correct video source. Now, the video tag have a few properties. The main properties are autoplay, basically starts playing automatically. Controls will show you the controls at the bottom of the video component. Loop will send the video in a loop. Preload is actually useful. Allow you to decide how you want to prefetch the video. So preload auto, it means you're basically delegating to the browser to understand what are the capabilities of this network. And so, for example, if the browser knows that it can get content from the network quickly, it will just start pulling the content. If you are on a mobile device and it knows that actually it's going to be expensive and slow, it will start pulling the video only when you actually hit play. And the other options that you have here are either none, which means don't do anything at this point. I'm just defining the tag, or metadata, which means start giving me only the information about the video, but don't start getting all of the content yet. And as you can see now, I'm setting up two different sources. Why I have two sources? Well, I'm sure you heard this before. The HTML5 specification gives you the video tag, but it doesn't tell you which codec you are supposed to use. And that's why different browsers, this is one of the key challenges that we're trying to solve today. Browsers are choosing different codecs. With Microsoft and i9, we decided to use H.264 just because it's the de facto standard today. It's the de facto codec. It's already on your phones, on the cameras, on computers. There is a lot of hardware that is ready for H.264. And we also support WebM if the codec is installed. Other browsers will have different options here. Something that you might run into is the ability to go full screen with the video. And one of the things that is actually missing from the specification today is full screen. You cannot send a video to full screen, right? It sounds silly. And actually, if you think about it, it's kind of the same issue that Flash or Silverlight had in the very first versions. And the reason is security. We didn't find a standard way to enable security properly for full screen APIs. And so if you want to send the video full screen, you need to use a few workarounds. One of these, for example, I have here a video. What I'm doing, I'm just attaching to the resize event and to the load event. I'm getting the video, and I'm just saying, OK, overlay this on top of the page with the zeta index 100, and just maximize it. And so the end result is that when I run this page, it's actually going to fill the content of the page. And as you can resize, like, it will just fill the page. It's kind of a full screen. Now, if you want to do a real full screen, another trick could be to open a new window. So you open a new window. You set that window like without the border, without the toolbar and everything, and that will be a real full screen. Keep in mind that in that scenario, you will need to find a, you will need to give the user a way to close that window. Otherwise, you will not have like the navigation buttons. If you don't like the video player that the browser gives you, you notice that each browser, basically, when you set the controls property here at the bottom, they give you like a player. And in this case, for example, IE gives you play pause, then it gives you the remaining time, allows you to change the volume. And as you right-click, you can also change, for example, the speed. If you don't like this and you want to implement your own, well, you have all of the events and all of the features defined in JavaScript that allow you to create your own custom player. Now, I will show you first what there is, what I created. So I created this beautiful player, right, where I can load the video, I can play the video, and I have my own beautiful progress bar with the current time and the percentage and the speed information. And then I can go faster, and you will see that the video will scroll faster. I can also mute and unmute. So isn't this beautiful? It's not, but technically it's good enough. And the way I do it is, let's have a look to the code here. I have only a few input buttons, right? And then I have like a placeholder div. Inside my JavaScript, I'm creating the element from JavaScript. So you can do basically create element video. And then you can create same way a source. So you can define the source with JavaScript and you can set up the source location and the type. And then you add the source like as a first element of your video tag. And then you can attach to these events, the load metadata, can play, and time update. And those are going to give you enough information to know the progress of the video or to know if the video is ready. And you can set up the properties, the other properties, the same way. As you look at the events, basically, they're also going to give you information like the network state, so is it ready, is it caching, is it pre-buffering, as well as like the you will know like the current duration of the video and the current time of the video playing. Obviously, based on this information, you can create really compelling video players. Now, let's talk about fallbacks, right? The HTML5 video is great, but what happens if my browser doesn't support HTML5, first, fallback, or doesn't support the codec of the video that I am sending? There are different techniques for doing this. Let's start from the basics. First of all, you want to ask the browser, hey, browser, do you support HTML5 video? And do you support, in particular, my video? And so this is what I'm doing with this function called check video support. And in this function that I'm calling, you see, on the onload events, I'm basically creating a video element. And then I'm asking, can play type? This information is enough to know if the video is supported. So let's start running this page. Can play type returns true. Sure, I'm on IE9. I support the video tag, and so I can proceed. Now, the next test that I'm going to do is, can play type video MP4? So this is for my particular video that I have on the page. And the answer is, maybe. IE9 is telling me, yes, maybe you can play the MP4 type. Maybe. I mean, this is like the standard way to do it. Like, I think it's the first time in history of computers that I don't get true, false, but I get maybe. Why maybe? Well, because actually MP4 is like the container, but then inside the container you can have different codecs. So let's define the right codec here. And the next check is going to ask, can I play the type MP4 with the codecs ABC1, blah, blah, blah? Right? So this time I'm specifying the exact codec I use for my video. And the answer is probably. Now, this is funny, right? It is funny. But this is as far as you can go with the HTML5 video tag when you ask, do you support this video? Let me explain you now that like, we look at the funny elements. And it will never tell you yes, right? You need to, and this is again, any browser, they will never give you yes. This is how it's defined in the specification. Why? The complexity from a browser perspective is that it doesn't want to take the risk to say, sure, I can play this video, because maybe you are on a phone, right? And maybe you have a video that has this codec, but the network is too slow to get the codec and show the video. And so it doesn't want to, the browser will not tell you yes, because it's not totally sure, right? However, if you get to this stage, probably, you're most likely going to play that video. And you need to trust the browser, right? This is done for you. It's not something that is doing to avoid or to mess up with your code. That said, so this is the way you programmatically know if the video is supported. And now, obviously, I'm playing my video. Notice here at the bottom of the page, I have my video. Let's say that I want to run this video in other browsers. One of the first challenge is that, actually, let's start from, for example, from IE8 or 7 or 6, right? We didn't support HTML5 video 10 years ago. It didn't exist. So how can you play this video in another browser? Well, what you can do is just rely on a plugin. So in this case, for example, I'm going to add some a Silverlight player here. So I have a Silverlight player. And in the parameters of this player, I'm just setting exactly the same video. You see video MP4, and I have exactly the same video. So I just encoded the video once, and then I'm sending this video to the Silverlight tag. So let's run this page again in I9, and it's still using... Okay, let me actually comment this. So in I9, obviously, we're still using the HTML5 version, right? If I change the browser mode, for example, to, let's say, to I7, you will see that this time I have a Silverlight control. This is my Silverlight player that allows me to play the video using Silverlight. It's easy, right? So the video tag is everything you put inside the video tag, it's a fallback. So I6, for example, doesn't understand the video tag, so when you start parsing this page, you just skip this line, go to the next line. Do I understand source? No, I don't. Do I understand object? Yes, and so we show you the object. What about other browsers, right? You want to show, for example, an MP4 video on, I don't know, Firefox. A Chrome, it would work. Firefox, it doesn't, because Firefox doesn't support MP4. And so you have either two strategies at that point. One strategy is to re-encode the video using WebM and add in another source. Another strategy could be to use Silverlight for Firefox as well. In that case, you need to add a few extra lines of code. In particular, you need to add a non-error listener. Here it is. So on the last source that you define in this page, you need to add the on-error listener. And you also need a function. Let's maybe add this function here. That basically unwrap the Silverlight control inside the video tag and it pull it out. And this will allow you to run this video in Firefox as well. This code might sound tricky. All it's doing is taking the Silverlight component and is setting it up before the video, and then is getting ready of the video. And you can run this on any browser, and this will allow you to run the video across any browser. Obviously, all of the source code that I'm using today will be available. I will give you the link later so you can look at this in more detail. All right, enough for the video. Let's move into another great feature of HTML5, which is the canvas. The canvas is a way, is something I like to call the canvas a stupid control. And the reason it's stupid is that really it doesn't do anything. That's the canvas. No properties, no content, you cannot do anything. Everything you put inside the canvas, again, is the fallback. So if the canvas is not supported, it will show you that content. At the same time, it's very powerful. It's really powerful. And you can actually interact with the canvas from JavaScript. The way you do it is you need to take the canvas. Notice that I'm using the query selector. Now, just a pulling. How many of you already know what the query selector does? No? Just one. Great. I trust you know it, so. It's getting more complex here. Ah, didn't fly so far. Can you please pass it along? So the query selector allows you to basically scan the page for elements, oh, I was on the right, thanks, for elements with the of the type canvas, and you can do this obviously for any element. You can actually use any CSS rule here. And it will basically give you all of the elements, in this case, that are canvases. Because I have only one canvas, it will give me one element. The next line is going to check if canvas is supported by this browser. And in particular, the 2D context is supported. If it is, then I'm going to create a gradient. And the way you create gradients is just create linear gradient. And you have linear or radial gradients. And you add, like, obviously, the color stops. Then you take your canvas and you set the fill style. So this is a style that applies generically to all of the canvas element. And in particular, you draw a rectangle with 200 pixel dimensions. So the end result is, okay, and this is because my page is running in i7 mode, and so I need to go back to i9, and the end result is my canvas. Nothing super fancy so far. Now, what you can do with the canvas, obviously, is you can draw. And let me run this code first. I have a page here, and as I move the mouse, the canvas is just following my mouse and is drawing. Beautiful. And I also have a button here. It's called Save. It's actually taking a screenshot of the canvas and is exporting this into an image. This is an image. In particular, this is what we call data URI. So it's a way to serialize content into a long string. And then you can pass this string to, like, an image element or to any other element. So it starts with the MIME type, and then it follows with all of the content. Right? This is like the image serialized into one string. And at that point, the user can eventually save this image externally or do whatever he wants with it. What about the code? So first of all, I'm getting the canvas, same way, I'm getting the context. And as the mouse moves, I'm basically drawing using begin path, then I move to, and then I close the path. To save, I basically use this property called canvas, this method, toDataURL. And this is going to create that data URI string that I can pass, like, as a regular source to an image tag. If you want to draw images on the canvas, you can. So in this case, for example, I'm creating a new image. And then I have a canvas, and I'm drawing the image calling drawImage. Now, let me run this code. Actually, it's not drawing the image. Why? Well, the challenge here is that when the browser reached this line, drawImage, the image is actually not ready yet, might not be ready yet, right? Because you just set up the source here. So the browser maybe still needs to fetch the image. So what you need to add here is just like an image dot add event listener. Then you attach to the load event. And only when the image is fully loaded, then you draw this on the canvas. So if we run this page again, this time it will draw my image. This is, again, one of the most common mistakes using the canvas and images that developers do. The other things you need to be aware with the canvas are animations. You obviously want to do animation. And so let's run this page first. I have two animations here. I'm moving an apple. The first animation is based on frame. The second animation is based on time. What's the difference? Let's have a look to the code. I have two loops here. You can see that I'm setting the interval. Every 16 milliseconds, I'm calling the draw function, and the draw function called both draw frame and draw time. The draw frame is just going to increment the position and increment the position. The draw time, instead, is going to get the current time elapsed between one call and the other, and is going to calculate the delta of the position based on the time. So the frame will go as fast as the timer of the browser will go. The time will be perfect and will be tuned to the performance that you want to go at. So the scenario here is, if you need to go as fast as possible, then use the frame. If you want to be predictable over the animation, the timing, then use time. You can also apply transforms to objects in the canvas. And so in this case, for example, I'm translating the using an offset. This is X, Y, obviously, axis. And then I'm rotating. and then I'm drawing the rectangle. And so the end result is that I'm drawing this rectangle, and I'm rotating this rectangle around. And the other powerful thing that you can do on the video, oh, sorry, on the canvas, is you can also draw, same way you did for images, you can draw a video. So in this page, for example, I have one video tag, and I have one canvas. In the code behind, I'm basically getting the context, and then you see here, I have this set interval to 60 frames per second. That is basically calling himself every 60 milliseconds, and he's drawing on the canvas the video. So my video is basically the video tag on this page. When you do this call, he's basically taking a frame from the video, and he's drawing that frame into the canvas. And so the video is basically becoming just like a static images, and it keeps pushing static images. But the end result is that the end user doesn't need to know if you're using a video tag or a canvas tag. For the end user, this will just look like a video. And in this case, in particular, I have two videos. And if you notice, the two videos are flipped, right? The video below is flipped. And the way I do that is using the scale, and then I use the trick of -1, which basically will turn the video around. So far, this is not very interesting, but let's do some more magic to this. So let's add a gradient. And so I'm adding here, for example, a gradient, linear gradient, which is from black to transparent, right? This is RGBA color, so the last one is the alpha channel. 0 means that this is going to be a transparent color. And I'm going to draw this gradient on top of my video. So I draw on the canvas the frame from the video first, and then I draw that gradient on top of it. And so the end result here is going to be here it is. A nice effect. And so now you have like the video with the shadow and the gradient below. And obviously you can go as far as you want with this, just using HTML5. What do you think about this? You like it? I did my best to notice. And obviously it's clear that I'm not a designer, like, but you see how easy it is to make things that with plugins, like you had to wait for years. And the performance here is just awesome. Now, based on all of these things that you've seen so far, some months ago I was on a long flight and I was bored, and so I decided to build a little game. And the game, I took inspiration from other airplanes flying around me. And so I thought, what would happen if something would try to eat those airplanes? And so I built my mini tank. And so you can see here that there is a tank that is shooting at like a UFO. You can see the performance is just nice, right? And there are different elements here that are moving. You see the background, there are gradients that are animating. There is audio in the background. So let's have a look to the code of this game. So the code of this game, actually, it's nothing more than what you've seen so far, all mixed together. So I'm defining here like a few classes for the aliens and the bullets. And each class is basically store the position on the screen. The isDirty flag is just a way to optimize and to avoid to draw the object, if it's already out of the screen. Then I'm getting my canvas at the beginning. Then I start playing the sound. I preload the resources, and we will go to this in a second. And then, as you can see here, in the draw background, in the draw function, I'm basically drawing the different elements on top of each other. So I have a draw background that is going to draw my linear gradient. Then I draw all of the hills, the sun, and the clouds, and I move the clouds in the meantime. Then I draw the tank, and I draw the tank based on the position also of the mouse. And as I moved the tank, I'm not sure if you noticed, I was also rotating the tires around so that the tank gave you the impression that it was actually moving. And then I drove the bullets, and this is just like an array, and then I'm moving the bullets up and down, and I do a mini math here to detect like the collision with actually the alien. The interesting part here is the preload resources. You want to preload all of the assets before you actually start playing the game. And the way I do this, I'm just using a little trick. So as I go through the list of resources that I want to preload, I increment this buffer, right? This is just a counter that tells me the number of resources that I need to preload. Then I start preloading them, and when they're ready for each resource, I'm attaching to the load event, and I'm decrementing that buffer. And so I know that all of the resources will be preloaded when that buffer is zero. And here at the end, I'm basically setting a timeout, and I check if that buffer is zero. If the buffer is not zero, then I keep waiting for other 100 milliseconds, and I got this as this in a loop. And so when the buffer is zero, then I know that all of the resources are ready, and I can start drawing and playing the game. Again, this is a best practice. It's actually how you most likely want to write your code if you're building this type of applications. How many of you are going to write other games with tanks shooting to aliens now? No one? Must be sick then. Okay. Now, we talk a lot about HTML5. There is this other big specification called SVG, which basically it's another way to do drawing on the browser. And SVG focuses on scalable context, versus Canvas is more like pixel-perfect content. SVG is actually an old standard and allows you to define object this way. Now, this is very easy. What is this? Try to compile this in your mind, then you launch it, you debug it, and you tell me what you're actually seeing from this code. It's easy, come on. Just a few points. Sorry? HTML5. Where do you see the 5 here? No, actually, it's not that easy. But how can we see this? Well, the first way to see SVG is, for example, to have an image tag. The source, you set the source to SVG, to the SVG file. And then is it? There it is. This is actually that SVG file. Right. It was easy, I told you. Now, you can also embed SVG inside an XHTML5 page, XHTML, or inside a normal HTML page. So in this case, you see I just have an HTML page, and then I have my SVG snippet with all of the code that I want. Now, this is very easy. This is the way we do things in Italy. In fact, this is my flag, right? It's much easier. Now, SVG is very powerful because it's actually part of the page. It contributes to the page, meaning that all of the CSS rules that you already learned in the past, they apply to SVG as well. So, for example, here I have an SVG fragment, and I have a circle here, and you can notice that I didn't define the color. Using CSS, I can query for all of the circle elements and set up my color. So you can apply CSS rules to SVG. And you can also do the opposite. So I have here, for example, a div called box. And then in my CSS, I'm basically setting the box. In the background, instead of saying use a color or an image, I'm setting an SVG element. So as I run this page, we're going to see a div with the original flag. And then on top of this div, the circle of the new SVG elements that is styled using the other CSS. And so you can see how this contribution goes both ways. This is one of the beautiful things about HTML5. You will notice that there are a lot of technologies, a lot of languages and markups and way to do things. But at the end of the day, each one is actually working with the others versus what you probably used to do with plugins where you had your sandbox and that was it, right? There was no way to interact with the page. Same way as we did for the canvas, you can actually create a gradient using SVG. This is actually a nice option. If you want, for example, to provide gradients to other elements on your page. For example, in this page, I have an input button. You see that the type is button. And I want to, like the background of this button, I want it to be a gradient. How would you do it today? Well, maybe you would use an image. How would you do it tomorrow? There is a new property called CSS3 gradients, which will allow you to put gradients. However, this is still something that browsers are working on. How can you do it today? Well, I created these little things, and this is the 400 level session, right? This is tricky, so bear with me. What I'm doing here, I'm creating an array, and I'm pushing to this array different colors. These are my color stops. So I have a yellow and a red with different offsets. Then I'm creating a gradient using those colors. And in particular, the create gradient function is basically going to create an SVG tag. And then dynamically, I'm building this SVG tag, and I'm dynamically adding my stop color into my SVG tag. And in particular, this is a linear gradient. And then I also define a rectangle that uses that gradient. And you can see that the way I'm doing it is I have a fill property that is connected to the URL, GR, and GR is actually the name of the gradient. So we will see that GR is here, is the ID for my linear gradient. Now, this is my SVG tag in text form. Once I have this, and basically we go back here to my var SVG, the next line takes this JavaScript function that encodes that SVG tag into text. So I'm serializing that SVG tag into a data URI, the same thing that we saw earlier. And in particular, I need to append basically my meta tag. So this is a data URI. And then the next step, I'm basically taking the gradient, the CSS rule called gradient, and I'm changing the background to be URL of that data URI. And so the end result, it's a gradient. Now this is powerful because it means that now you have a framework and you can take any things on your page. It doesn't need to be a button. It can be any part of the page. And you can basically define a gradient as a background for that page just using those very three lines of code. Everything else is just a library. And in fact, if you go to the IE test drive today, some of my colleagues in the Internet Explorer team, they took this approach and they make a little tool that basically allows you to do this in a more visual way. So you see that you can define the gradient and the color stops and the directions, and then below it will give you either the SVG or the CSS source. And this is doing exactly the same. So what we did before was basically generating this data URI here that you can append into your CSS and start using gradients straight away. We talk about CSS, and actually there are a lot of news with CSS 3 as well. Some of the easy ones I will go quickly here are border radius. You know that you can do radius with on the corners. You can do box shadow. So for example, let's run this page. You see that I have a corner rounded, and then I have a box shadow. And then you can also set up RGBA colors, where the A is stands for the alpha channel. So you see, for example, that now I have an alpha channel applied only to the background. If you want to apply the opacity to the entire control, in this case a P control, you need to use the opacity. And so opacity, we basically apply the opacity not just to the background, but to the entire content. So look what happens when I refresh the page. You see also the text is becoming opaque. Another very rich, powerful property that you have into the CSS3 specification is the ability, it's called media query. And media query is the ability to basically use different CSS rules depending on characteristic of the page or the device. So look what happens when I resize the browser. Right? This is my hand, and you can see that I'm using a different hand depending on the size of the browser. Now, the interesting thing is that this page has zero line of JavaScript. So I'm doing all of this just using CSS. And the way I do it is basically using the media query called media. And then I say, if the width of this page is within this range, then use these rules. Otherwise, use other rules. Right? This is very powerful, for example, if you are building an application and you want it to run on a mobile device as well. On the mobile device, you might want to simplify the style sheet. You might want to use different rules. You might want to actually display different content. And you can do this now just using CSS3. Another property of CSS3 is advanced fonts. This is a new standard that Microsoft and Mozilla submitted last year, and it's called WOF, has this funny name. And WOF is new container for standards, standard font. I have here, for example, an H1 class, and I have some text. And then using the font face property, I'm basically using, I'm connecting to the WOF font. And the result is going to be a very nice font. And this is a font, right? This is text, so you can select and you can do anything you did before with it. Now, what I love about I9 in particular is that we are drawing the fonts like at the pixel perfect level, which means is if I start zooming on this page, you see, this is really perfect to the pixel. Like I can keep zooming and you will see exactly how the font should look like, and you can still select and do anything. So this is quite powerful. The last demo that I have with CSS is actually this page. And the interesting thing about this page, it is just some CSS, and then the page itself is made of divs. So there is nothing but divs, right? You can see that it's only divs. Now, instead of using Internet Explorer, this time I'm going to use this other tool called Expression Web Super Preview. How many of you have seen this tool before? Okay, just a few. This tool basically allows you to preview a web page using different rendering engines. Different version of Internet Explorer, as well as Chrome, Firefox, as well as Safari, but not on Windows, on Mac, right? And obviously it's clear, this is a Windows machine, and I don't have i6.7 installed here. So let's pull, for example, i6 on the left here, and let's start previewing this page, and this is what that page looks like with i6. Now let's try with i9, and let's also add i8, and let's add, 7, 8, 9. 7 is still similar. 8, it's getting closer. 9, that's it. Right? So basically, that page is taking some divs and uses just CSS rules, is transforming that divs into almost an image, like this is Doraemon. And the other nice thing here is that you can add other browsers. So you can, for example, crawl on Chrome, or you can look at Safari. Then let's do Safari 5 on Mac. And now it's basically sending this markup into the cloud where there are racks of Mac machine. It's loading the page on a Safari on a Mac, and then it's giving me back the result. And now this allows you to set them like side by side. And as you can see, Safari 4 will not be able to render this. Safari 5 is quite close, but actually it's not exactly as rich as 9. And you can do this across several browsers. So this is a very powerful tool. I invite you to check it out. Now, the last section is about ECMA. ECMAScript is the code name for JavaScript. And there are actually a lot of news with the JavaScript language as well. And sometimes we forget to talk about JavaScript, but JavaScript is the language for building any HTML5 application, so it's worth spending some time. One of the very first rules that we implemented, features that we implemented in IE8 as well, was called JSON. If you're using JSON, how many of you are using JSON today? Okay, so you know that in the past, you probably used some library. You had to attach like a JavaScript library that was doing all of the JSON stuff for you. And then at some point, we thought, why don't we just make this part of the browser, and we optimize the performance, right? We don't need to let developers use external libraries. And so now you have this JSON object, which is part of the browser. I don't have any library here. And does all of the serialization and deserialization for you. We also know that you work a lot with arrays, right? Array is the main structure in JavaScript. And so ECMAScript 5 defines a lot of new method to actually interact with the array. So you can do things like index of. If you're coming from like a managed language, either .NET or Java, you know that these are kind of silly. But in JavaScript, we never add those. So it's great that finally it's a part of the language. You can have a for each, which is basically something that allows you to iterate through all of the items and then apply basically a function to each item. It's kind of like similar to lambda expression. Then you have an every. So you say, for every item, then give me this result. Or you can take only some of them. So check is like a Boolean check, true, false. Or you can actually map the array. So you can say, take this array, apply some function, and give me back a new array with new values. In this case, for example, I'm negating the value. Or you can filter, and so on. Like, there are a lot of new features applied to the arrays. Everything that we discussed today works across any browser that support these HTML5 features. And I think on this part in particular, the ECMAScript 5, IE9 has been the first browser to implement all of the ECMAScript 5. I think that today, at least all of the nightly and daily builds of all other browsers should have a fairly good support of it. In particular, those functions, I think most of them are already supported in all browsers. So you can take this. Again, it's not IE9 specific. You can take this and apply it to any other browser. It's nice that this time we've been the first to support this. So it's great that for developers, obviously. Another thing that we know developers are doing, they're trying to create like object-oriented language using JavaScript. But JavaScript is not really designed for it. And so some of the new things that ECMAScript 5 define is a way to create object. In the past, if you want to create a class using JavaScript, you probably use this pattern. You create an empty function, then you create a prototype, and then you eventually instantiate a new element of that function. And on the prototype, you can attach properties or you can attach method. So now there is an easier, a cleaner way to do it, which is object.create. So object.create, again, I'm not using jQuery here. It's just like plain HTML page. And object.create allows you to create an object and basically do a reflection of this appointment class that I defined above. And so it will get all of the types, and it will get all of the names from that class. You can also assign new properties to this object. Previously, you set the property just to your object or to the prototype. Now you have like the define property method on the object. And this also allows you to set up read-only properties. So you have a better level of granularity into your application. There are, lastly, a few functions that are finally in JavaScript as well. In particular, the trim, easiest trim. You have a date now, which is going to give you the current time. And you also have a couple of functions to work with the timing. So either to convert to ISO string or to do date parse, so starting from a string and convert that into a date time frame. This is something that, again, in the past you had to use external libraries, now just codified into the language. And all of these together, they are defined in the ECMAScript 5. The other feature that I'm not showing you here is called strict mode, which is something that we implemented in IE10, and that really complex the 100% support for ECMAScript 5. So we saw today, I showed you a lot of in detail features of HTML5. You now understand that all of this stuff is ready. As I said, it's supported in IE9 as well as in other browsers. And if it's not supported today, it will come very soon. So this is something you can start using today and rely on. And I also showed you how to eventually fall back to other browsers that don't support this yet. In the last few minutes, I'd like to show you a couple of websites that actually have been designed using exactly the same features that you saw today. And the first website I want to show you comes from Japan. This is from a Japanese agency. When I basically work with them, I ask them to challenge the performance of the browser, as well as the technology. And basically, I ask them, can we do something using HTML5 that is actually nice and compelling? And this is what they came up with. Obviously, this is an HTML5 video. Nothing impressive so far. Look at this. We'll be right back. Did you like them? Do you like it? You say, well, it's a video. Actually, it's not a video. That's the tricky part. As a matter of fact, if I go here to edit animation, and I'll choose the single mode, everything that you saw there was SVG. It was based on SVG. I was animating SVG, which means that I can eventually interact with this SVG. I can change the color of the eyes, the color of the skin. And all of this will actually be replayed using my new colors. So if I generate animation here, it will work for some time. And then it will replay the full video there, the full sequence, using my new colors. So SVG is actually not just for boring charts or that type of old stuff. SVG is powerful, as powerful as you can allow you to build videos today. So did you like it now? And again, this is obviously available. You can go there and do like view the source code and look at the code behind on this page. The next demo I want to show you is from France. This is another partner we've been working with. And they wanted to create like a book experience, a comic. And they create this story called Never Mind the Bullets, which basically is built on top of Wolf and Canvas, and there is SVG here. And it's also built on top of this parallax effect. So as you move into the story, you basically unveil new elements, right? And you basically interact with the story. And then you can go from one room to the other. So those are CSS transforms. And you can see that the story unveils as you move the mouse around the page. And look at the performance. It's just smooth and it's beautiful. Another one is a game from a US agency. And they basically just built a little game, the pool game, I'm sure you already know. But look at how clean and polished this experience is. So you get all of the shadows and all of the nice interaction that you would expect. And I'm very bad at this game, as you can guess. And the last website I want to show you is actually from another developer in France. And this developer built a 3D experience for the National Museum of China. So this is already the experience that they're using in China to allow visitors to preview what the museum is going to look like. And as you can see, the visitor, like the player, just moving the mouse, can pan around and you get like a steady 60 frames per second. And you can zoom in. And you can eventually go from one room to the other. So each room will have a different setup. And the nice thing here is that this page is being written in JavaScript using some of the ECMAScript 5 features that I showed you earlier. And there are actually just like something like 200 lines of code here. The JavaScript is very, very clean. It's a mini JavaScript library. And I invite you actually to right-click and look at the code, because the code of this page is the best code, the best JavaScript code I ever seen. So there are a lot of good practices there. And the performance is just great. So you don't need to learn a new language. You can just use JavaScript to do pretty much anything you want. A few pointers. Today, I use Visual Studio. Visual Studio from the Service Pack 1 enabled the IntelliSense for HTML5 elements into the page. If you have older version, there is an extension in the gallery that allows you to use IntelliSense also for previous versions. There is one project we've been working on, which basically is an extension for Adobe Illustrator, and allows you to create your own scene and everything in Adobe, and then export it to Canvas. So you create your beautiful animation or whatever in Adobe, and then you have this component that exports that into Canvas and JavaScript. And the last one is a library called Modernizer, which is a nice library. It's one of many. But this library does particularly well to detect if objects are supported. So I show you today like the code behind to see if video is supported. You might want to check if some CSS3 property is supported or if some ECMAScript 5 property is supported. And so this library basically is a good starting point for understanding that. The main links I want to point you to are Beauty of the Web, which includes the links to all of the demo that I just showed you. IE Taste Drive is where we post all of the new demos from the Internet Explorer team that focus on particular technical features. As well as invite you to go to the W3C website and have a look to the HTML5 specification. It's just like a document. And actually, if you're looking for resources to learn, that's the best place to go. And just look at the properties and all of the descriptions. If you're looking for a book, that the first line there is a book that I recommend. It's a very small book, doesn't have a lot of pages, but is a good start to ramping up with HTML5. With that, I'd like to thank you. All of the code that I use today is available on my blog. There is already there a blog post, so you can go there and download it and play with it. Again, thank you for your time. I want to take any questions if there is. Thank you. Any question? Sure. So the question is, we say i9 has a great HTML5 support, but then I go to htmlfivetest.com and it gets a low score. So htmlfivetest.com, for those of you that don't know, is basically a website that does some, how do you say in English, some test of specific features here and there. And that's fine. However, the right approach to test is, if we support, for example, SVG, we need to build 1,000 tests to see if we really support SVG. It's not enough to test if we support the SVG tag. We need to test if we support all of the other property methods. And also, we need to test if we support them in an interoperable way, meaning that the way we implement SVG works exactly the same in Chrome, exactly the same in Firefox, exactly the same in Safari. So that's the approach that Microsoft is taking. And if, as a matter of fact, I think we submitted something like, I think it's 25,000 test cases. That website has 100. 25,000. And we're working with the W3C on this, which is the main entity. And we're also, as I said at the beginning, i9, as everything that I show you today, is focused on what's available today, what you can start using today and rely on today. We are talking like we're taking the more serious approach here. There are other features. At the beginning, you remember that the slide with 100 specs? Some of these specs are like 2-3 years away from being ready. They change every day. And so we basically work behind the scenes on the specification, but we don't implement them in the browser. And that's why when you go to sites like htmlfivetest.com, they will actually already test if the browser supports that feature. But that test is not giving you useful information, right? It tells you that Chrome supports, for example, features that are changing like daily. Is that a useful information for you? Probably not. What you really want to know is what you can rely on today and what you want to know if the browser is supporting the future or in the longer term. And you can get this information using like the Microsoft website. There is another website called HTML5 Labs, which I recommend you and I will show you later in another session. What about for the pages that I show you today?
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why, and the reason is that, we have a long history with browsers, and we learn a lot in our past. And now every time we implement something into the browser, we actually write test cases to make sure that what we do in IE works seamlessly in the other browsers. And if it doesn't, we have a test case, and we can go to Mozilla, and it's a conversation that we have every day, and it's like both ways, right? And we say, hey, we have this page that looks differently from browser to browser. So what's the point? Like, did we implement it in the wrong way? Maybe the specification is not clear. And so where there are ambiguities, we're working with the W3C to fix those. Otherwise, for most of the things that you have today in i9, we really work together, W3C and other browsers and other partners, to make sure that everything is really standard compliant. This table, I don't want to trick you. This table is a summary of all of the test cases that we submitted to W3C. It's a subset. Like W3C is getting test cases from other browsers as well. But altogether, they help, lastly, you developers, because we are hiding here the complexity of interoperability, which is a challenge and which is one of our top priorities. Yes? The question is HTML5 the last version of HTML5? Of HTML? Yes and no. So yes, technically the specification today is called, it's called HTML5. As I said at the beginning, today when you and me and everyone talks about HTML5, really they mean those 100 specifications, right? So technically, if you're talking only about that HTML5 specification, yes, it's the last one. If you're talking about the broader spectrum, then there are like 100 different names, and we will need to talk and discuss about which one is the last name or not. There is work actually happening to start working on the next version of the HTML5 spec, so only that spec. And this is something you will hear in the next months. Sorry, say it again. When is it going to be good standard? Yes. So when is going to be a standard? HTML5 has been under work for 3 years. It's now to the point where it is just about to get to last call. Just about. If you're coming to the session later, I will give you more information. There is another keynote. But actually, it's coming like as a matter of a few hours. It's going to become a last call, which means future complete. And that's about the HTML spec, HTML5 spec. After last call, basically, I think there is a period of 8 weeks in which all of the people working on the standard will have like the last chance and opportunity to submit a feedback. And after that, it's going to be locked. That's it. That's the standard. And it's going to become a recommendation. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And obviously, there is still some work to do, a lot of work to do. HTML5, again, is one. Then there are all of these others. And we've been pushing and working like a lot behind the scenes to make sure that we accelerate the development of the standards, making sure that you can start benefit of those features as app. And IE9 is available, so you can already rely on those.
Could you use it for a very popular site
on the internet? Would I use it for a very popular website? That's a very good question. I think that you know your audience better than anybody else. I travel a lot the world, and I've been in countries where, like, I would say that the market share, for example, let's take I6. The market share of I6 is 1%. I've been in other countries where the market share of I6 is 55%. Luckily, this is not one of those. And so I think it depends on the audience of your site. My recommendation, again, HTML5 is an incremental thing. Using HTML5 doesn't mean always breaking the experience for previous website. So if you already have an experience based, for example, on Flash or Silverlight or some sort of like plugin, then I think this is a good time to start thinking about the HTML5 experience as well. Keeping in mind that you need to make all of your users happy. So it's always good to have an HTML5 things which is new, and have a fallback solution for all the others. You don't want to build only HTML5 and block anybody else, because that will just upset the anybody else user. But I think it's ready, and it's ready to be used today. And I will give a few randoms. This is for the ladies. Any other question? Come on, I have a few other shirts here too, T-shirts. Yes. Special shirts, T-shirts for the ladies, I've been told. Any other question?
What about CSS3?
What about CSS3? So what's the question?
When it will be ready.
The good thing about CSS3, as you look at the standard, basically HTML5 is a monolithic document. It's a monolithic specification made of, I don't know, 1,500 pages. Like if you print it in Word, you will get a book. When you look at the CSS3 instead, it's divided into modules. And so there isn't one specification. There are different modules. And so, for example, there is one called background and borders. There is one called colors. There is one for transformations. And some of these modules are actually already ready, already done. Yes, they're already in the candidate recommendations. For example, all of the background and border modules is one of the most stable. In fact, it's already implemented in all browsers. Some others, for example, the colors for gradients, are still in flux. There is, for example, let me show you. There is a feature called CSS3 gradients, which basically allows you to do what we did today with the gradients, but in CSS3. Now, the specification is almost ready. However, there are still things. You can imagine there is a beautiful gradient here. Here it is. You get the gradient. The specification is getting ready, but it's not quite there yet. And that's why each browser is using the, you see the different syntax with a different browser prefix. And so in general, I think CSS3 is moving quickly. It took so long for CSS 2.1 to finalize that CSS3 is getting along fairly quickly. It depends on the specification. If you go to the W3C on the CSS working group, it will tell you exactly the status. And actually, if I go back to my slide, you will see that if you look at this slide, for example, you can see that on the CSS portion here, you can see the colors are different. So, like, some specification is still a working draft, and others instead are already in the candidate recommendation or last call. Usually, from last call, unless there are ambiguities, it takes 8 weeks to go to the next step. And once you get to the candidate recommendation, it should be a matter of a few weeks before you get to recommendation, usually. All right. Well, thank you for your time again.